B-Pod Studios.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Call and give us your take and then get off the phone.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, after six straight hours of Patriots, Chiefs, just give you a little Patriots breather. And it's worth it because we have a Hall of Fame voter here in our midst, a BBWA gold card member, I believe.
Yeah, him, I'm gold card, yeah.
Meaning he has a high number, meaning you're a...
No, I don't have a number anymore. I'm honorary status. It means I'm not active.
Honorary status.
Yeah, gold means you're not active.
Okay.
Because I'm not actually going and covering games anymore.
But you're still a voter.
I'm still a voter, yeah. And these, you know, in my defense, these are guys I covered.
Okay, so here we are. Four guys got in. Mo Rivera, the first ever, first time ever, the BBWA voted someone in 100%. Bill Ballew of the Worcester Telegram Gazette was not going to vote for him. He was going to abstain, but I don't know if he's come out and explained himself, but he changed his mind and voted for Mo Rivera. So Mo Rivera got to 100%, first time ever. Roy Halladay with a resounding 85% of the vote on his first year. He's in. Edgar Martinez, a pet project of Maz's for years, in his 10th and final year, becomes the first full-time DH to be elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame with 76% of the vote, just barely. He had 85, too. I was looking at the wrong list. Martinez with 85% of the vote is in. And Mike Mussina, the fourth member, just barely gets in at 76.7%. That was his sixth year of eligibility. He's out. First of all, your thoughts on the four.
Okay, so I voted for Rivera, I voted for Halladay, I voted for Edgar, I did not vote for Mike Mussina. And so, and I would even tell you that with regards to Edgar Martinez, I didn't think he was going to get in when the whole process started. You know what he got in his first year?
I hate this, don't tell me.
Like 26%.
Did he put up any stats in the last 9 years?
And now he's 85%. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah. It becomes a campaign. It becomes political, not about the results or not about the merit.
So now I'd be the first to tell you that I did it as a crusade because I thought my point is DHs don't get enough credit. I never thought this guy would get in. I'm not joking. I voted for him, but I never thought he would get in. I thought there's a bias against the DH and he won't get in. 85% stuns me. The 100% on Rivera, which is the detail that most people are focusing on today, he deserves it. There's no gray area there. I voted for him. Everyone did. I mean, Rivera deserves it. The obvious question is, why him? Why now? Why not Ken Griffey 4 years ago, whenever the hell it was? You're telling me Ken Griffey was any less worthy? So now what? We got rid of some old guys on the voting body, and that's what the difference was? That some jackass wasn't sitting at his house saying, Mickey, I'm going to make, because Babe Ruth wasn't, I'm going to make sure that this guy's not?
Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays, Joe DiMaggio.
Ted Williams, Stan Musial.
The greats of the greats didn't do it because, wasn't there, I was mentioned this yesterday, didn't Babe Ruth not get to 100% because of something sort of off the grid, meaning like... ballots didn't get in time. I thought I read this somewhere at one point. That
sounds right.
He didn't get to 100%, and it wasn't because it's not because the writers thought he was unworthy. It's because, the ballot didn't arrive, or they were away at the war, or something goofy like that is why he didn't get to 100%.
Yeah, and I think Ty Cobb was on the same ballot as Ruth, if I remember right. There's a good story on there out there about the whole thing that was written a few weeks ago on The Athletic by Joe Pazansky that has a lot of those details in it. Here's where I settled on it last night as I was driving home. Okay, we can all agree the standards are getting looser. So of all the things that were announced last night, you know what pissed me off the most?
What?
Larry Walker got 54.6% of the vote. Now, he's not in. Okay, you got to get 75% to get in. But more than half the voters out there think that Larry Walker belongs in the Hall of Fame. And so if you're asking me, ultimately, what do I want? Do I want a Hall of Fame voting body that really thinks favorably of people like Larry Walker? Or do I want a voting body that never has someone at 100%? I'll take the second thing. I'll take that over the first thing. Larry Walker? Larry effing Walker in the Hall of Fame? 55%? Are you kidding me with that crap? Holy smoke. Do you know what Larry Walker's career batting average at Coors Field was?
I don't.
381. You know what it was outside? 282. 100 points difference because he played on the moon for his career, most of his career. And there are people out there that think that that jackass, and I use that term loosely.
I understand.
Okay, I don't really know the guy. He's probably not a jackass.
Got it.
But that guy is a Hall of Famer? No, that's asinine.
He was a hack. He was like a nicer Dante Bichette. That he's even on the ballot in the first place is stupid to me, but I get it with the statistics. That they put Mike Messina in, just let everybody in now, because put Dale Murphy in, put all of these guys that were borderline, that were very good. No one ever feared Mike Messina. Larry Walker's a hack. Same with some of these other names. Harold Baines getting in, it's a joke.
Mike Messina, your thoughts?
No, Mike Messina's a B-plus pitcher. That's what he is, B-plus. That's it. He should not be in the Hall of Fame. And again, he has the misfortune of having pitched in an era with a lot of good pitchers, but too bad. There were guys in his era that were better than him. Clemens, Johnson, Maddox, Pedro, Glavin, all those guys racked up multiple Cy Young Awards. This guy, zero. Zip. And you know, honestly, off the top, he may have even won one. I don't think he did, though. I don't think he ever won the Cy Young, and he didn't get 20 games till the end of his career. The consummate 1B number two starter. That's what he was. And now, look, I think I'm consistent on this. So, like, I was a no on, you know, Burt Blylevin, who ended up getting in. I was a no on Jack Morris. I'm a no on Schilling. I'm a no on Andy Pettit. All of these guys, to me, who are just short. They were terrific in their own way. And Schilling is the best big game guy going. But they were never the best of the best. And I heard them say, I was listening to it on XM Radio last night on the way home on satellite because they have the MLB Network, the actual announcement. And when they announced it, I think they said 1.4% of all major league players get into the Hall of Fame. 1.4%. Is Mike Messina 1%? Is Larry Walker 1%?
Larry Walker.
Like the idea that these guys are 1%ers? I think it's asinine. Again, I'd rather have the Hall of Fame that never votes anyone in 100% than this one. I'd rather have that.
Schilling got 60.9%. That's a good jump from him. Anyone, what was the stat, Maz? Anyone who's ever been voted more than 50% eventually gets in?
Correct.
Okay.
I think we're on the verge now, though, of that ending. I think we're close to that ending.
Because of Larry Walker?
Yeah. I mean, guys like Walker, Bonds and Clemens are going to be close. I'm not sure Schilling's going to get there. He might. It's going to be close. I mean, maybe they take a jump, but you got more steroid guys coming off the ballot in future years. It's going to get complicated.
Okay, so what does it tell you? You think Schilling, Clemens, and Bonds are still out?
I think right now it's going to be close on those guys. I mean, the fact that Bonds and Clemens are, you know, iffy and in the same breath as Larry Walker is a freaking joke. That's a joke. And so the Baseball Hall of Fame had a certain, you know, someone sent an email to me this morning, a mystique about it, right? That there was a real honor, a real value there to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's gone. Or it's going. Both. Whatever. Like, we're putting Biggio in. We're putting Baines in. Mussina in. So what? Forget it. What's the point? It's not about the 1% anymore. Let's just be nice and let them all in. You have people voting, more than half the people voting for Larry Walker. I can't tell you how much that, I think I said in the email exchange this morning, that should be a crime against humanity, for crying out loud. Larry Walker, a Hall of Fame baseball player? If he's a Hall of Famer, what the hell are we doing? Just put everybody in. When's Jackie Bradley go in?
So Mike Mussina gets 76% of the vote. Andy Pettit's first year this year was 9.9%. Why do I think they were the same guy?
Pretty close.
I mean, Pettit, I thought, was a better big game pitcher.
He was.
I don't have the posted numbers ahead of me, but, you know, Pettit is someone I actually feared in a postseason game. Mussina, I never felt that way. Postseason or regular season. Nice pitcher. Andy Pettit, I thought, in the postseason, like, watch out for this guy. He can come up and, you know, he'll hurt you.
Pettit, to me, is a lot like Schilling. I mean, Schilling's numbers in the postseason are way better. Pettit had some bad postseason games, too. People forget that. But he pitched so many of them, for crying out loud, it was almost inevitable. But he was a guy the Yankees would be willing to give the ball to in a big spot and didn't hesitate.
How are Bonds and Clemens at right around 60%, 6-0, and Manny Ramirez is at 22.8?
Again, another one. I don't get it.
They're all steroid guys. What do you want?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand it. And I'm completely mystified now. I voted for Manny. I voted for Clemens and for Bonds.
And numbers only crept up just a little bit for Bonds and Clemens, correct?
Yes.
So it still shows you that you've got these hardliners when it comes to PEDs.
Like so it's all
Larry Walker.
But it's also not unusual, Murray, for guys' numbers to stay relatively flat in a year where there are good candidates added to the ballot. So, for example...
Yeah, but Schilling made a jump from 51 to 60.
Well, so that's true, and Walker made a big jump, right? So, I I'm mystified. I just think the whole thing really is way too soft. Way too soft. These guys want to put everybody in, be their friends, and whatever else. They want to put everybody in the Hall of Fame now. So, I'm probably not going to be voting much longer. It's not going to affect me anymore because, again, I haven't covered it on a daily basis, and sooner or later they're going to invoke that clause on me and kick me out.
Your BBWAA privileges are going to be revoked?
I believe so.
What?
You're going to lose your powers?
I thought it was a lifetime sort
right.
of thing.
No, no,
it's
no.
Like
they changed
the emperor.
They changed that a few years ago.
It's a lifetime of a Supreme Court justice.
Or the Pope.
That's an outrage.
I consider myself the Pope of the BBWAA.
You're going to lose your gold card. There's one guy on the list who I think deserves more, and that's Omar Vizquel. He was not going to have the offensive numbers, but in my lifetime, watching someone play shortstop, it was Ozzie Smith and him. And I put Omar right next to Ozzie Smith. Omar Vizquel was an absolute Hall of Fame talent with that glove in his hand.
Ridiculous.
Was absolutely...
Magician.
Breathtaking. Breathtaking. Larry Walker wasn't breathtaking at anything. I mean, and if you want to keep Omar Vizquel up because he hit, and I don't even know what he hit, 250? Was he a 250
hitter? Oh, I bet you he was higher than that. I bet you he was about 280.
Okay, so, but whatever. If the offensive numbers aren't there for Vizquel, I get it. But at least you could say to one side of the ball or one part of the game and say there was no one like that in his era. Larry Walker? Larry Walker.
I'm telling you, I heard that he drove off the road.
So he hit
night.
Well at Coors. I mean, I can name a million guys who hit well. Yeah,
so did Vinny Castilla.
Dante Bichette. Right. Is Fred McGriff now going to get in because he's getting these kind of numbers? Like, this is getting stupid.
No, Fred McGriff, this is 10th in last year.
Yeah,
39%.
This is his last year. He's out.
Bye.
He's out. Yeah, he shouldn't be in either. He's another one to me that was a very good player for a long period of time. But, you know, not just wasn't a great, truly great, great. You're not a one percenter. I don't know any other way to say it. I prefer the Hall of Fame be on the smaller side. I think these guys now, sabermetrics have ruined it because some jackass will come up with a number to show that Larry Walker's OPS plus was high. And I look at it and say, of course it was high. He was playing on Venus, for crying out loud, where there was no gravity. Anything you hit in the air went out of the ballpark.
Those are Maz's Hall
of Fame. His WAR 744.7.
Thank
so
you.
He's in.
Excellent. Those are Maz's Hall of Fame thoughts. You can mix them in with your Patriots calls right after this.
Dugger and Maz, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Maz.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, everybody. Time to pitch and complain about who Tony Maz thinks should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Maz's Hall of Fame ballot. Who'd he vote for and why? Did he port Clemens and Barry Bonds and Curt Schilling because he's a douche? Oh, it's Maz's Hall of Fame ballot. Who'd he vote for and why? He doesn't even cover the Red Sox anymore, but he's still in the BBWA.
Tradition here on Felger and Maz. Always this time of year it comes out. And it feels like every year it gets worse.
It is. It's getting worse. I agree.
Every year it gets worse. So we'll mix in these thoughts with our Patriots thoughts. Jake in Maine. Go ahead, Jake. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Listen, I'm going to a couple quick points and then I'll hang up and let you talk about it. I think I have a really easy solution to fix the Baseball Hall of Fame. You get 3 years on the ballot and you need 90%.
Love it.
If you can't get 9 out of 10 people... with 3 years to think about it, to agree, you belong there.
Love it. I'm just going to stop you right there. Love it. That'd be a nice way to get a small hall. But the floodgates are open now because once you – and I would also say you're not allowed to use precedent. In other words, just because Craig Biggio had 3,001 hits, the next, you know, little, you know, twerpy second baseman, hybrid catcher who gets 3,001 hits in 30 years of playing baseball doesn't get in just because the next guy got in. Stop using precedent.
I mean, they're useless because a lot of these guys didn't play against the same competition. Like, what point is there in comparing, like, Mike Mussina to Burt Blyleven? They played totally different eras. It just doesn't work.
Okay. Meanwhile, the Patriots agitating continues. You people are so easy. You catch a really nice break, with that Dee Ford offsides, but you can't accept that. You just can't say you got a nice break, can you? You've actually got to say the following. David in Plymouth. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello. It's me, Dave from Plymouth.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, Michael, I want to disagree because that's a free play.
You're saying,
and I think Brady knew it.
You're saying Brady knew that Dee Ford was offsides.
Yes, he did, because he doesn't miss anything. He looks up and down that line.
He doesn't miss anything.
That guy a little bit out.
He doesn't miss anything. How about that defensive lineman standing in the end zone that he threw the interception to? Did he see that?
Yeah, that one he blew, but this guy was standing still. A little bit easier to spot, I think.
Just the opposite. It's easy to spot if he jumps off sides. Then you know you got him. When he lines up off sides by, I don't know, 12 inches, 18 inches, 6 inches, somewhere in that range, can Tom Brady divert his eyesight to, like, can he remove his eye from his eye socket to get on the line of scrimmage and look straight down the line?
Oh, no. He doesn't have to. He can see out his left ear.
He said in his weekly radio interview he didn't see it. He said it, that he didn't see it.
If you can't handle the fact that you got some breaks in this game and you can't admit that, then I can't help you. I think this is the wrong show for you. I do. I really do. You caught a massive break there, and you had nothing to affect it. Nothing. It was a 100% unforced error. You didn't draw him off sides. You didn't run a cadence. You didn't play a game with him. You didn't do anything to bait him. For some unknown reason, out of the 97 plays that you ran, on that one, he put his hand over the line of scrimmage. And it saved you the game. Because if he didn't, the game's over.
It's unbelievable.
And that's just the fact. So, I mean, I if you can't accept that, that's really you and not me. I can't help you. Kevin at UMass. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, guys. Murray, you knew this was coming. Matt, did you vote for Schilling?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't think Schilling pitched in an era with guys who were better than him, a lot of guys who were better than him.
Really? Did you vote for Mussina? You didn't?
No.
Okay. Are you sure that's why you voted for him? Because I'm pretty damn sure he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and thinking that why he wasn't voted in.
Why, Kevin, quit beating around the bush. What's your point?
Kevin, you think I hold his Twitter thing against him?
Maybe not you, but I'm sure other voters did.
So that might be true. I mean, again, I can't speak for other voters, and I don't remember if it happened before Schilling's first year of eligibility or not. But I can tell you, I've never voted for Schilling.
When you say Twitter thing.
So he put Schilling, I think it's one of the things that cost him the job at ESPN. He put a thing up on Twitter.
So his political stuff. Is
That was it. And there were guys, and it involved members of the media and, you know, generally speaking.
I see. The T-shirt of the guy that said something like.
Lynch journalist.
Right.
And so a lot of guys hold that against him. I don't. I mean, to me, there's lots of scoundrels in the Hall of Fame. I'm just telling you that, to me, you got to draw a line somewhere. And Schilling, unfortunately, pitched in an era with a lot of guys who were better than him.
So, I would vote for him, but I'm unscientific. You know, I don't look at numbers. I just, in my mind's eye, does the name feel like a Hall of Famer to me? And I'm still a small hall guy. But I think Schilling, you know.
His postseason performances are just flat out dominant. So, on that alone, I think he should get in.
I put a ton of weight on postseason performance. That's why I would go Pettit over Mussina. Because I just told you, Pettit, I feared in the postseason. He delivered, won championships, and he was a part of them. But I do think Schilling's political stuff is held against him. Of course it is. We live in these times. We live in these times where everyone acts like a massive vagina when it comes to politics. Everyone on both sides. So is it held against him? Of course. Because no one can handle it. Because everyone's children when it comes to politics. So, yeah, it's held against him. Just like it would be someone on the other side of it, if it was a conservative voting body, you don't think that would be held against them? Of course it would, because everyone holds it against everybody now. That's why it's painful and useless to even talk about. Here's Colin in Miami. Go ahead, Colin. What do you got?
Hi. I want to comment on you guys talking about who you'd take from the Rams earlier. I forget who said it, but it was an ice-cold take that you wouldn't take Aaron Donald.
Greg Bedard says he doesn't know about Donald because he doesn't know whether we would fit the system or not.
Well, he's the most versatile defensive lineman in the game and easily the best. There's no one Belichick would want more than the guy that can play on the inside or the outside.
How about a guy that makes 100
speaks for itself?
How about a guy that makes $100 million guaranteed?
That's the problem. You guys didn't mention the contract before, but that's the only reason you wouldn't take him.
Okay, so, and I just made up that number. I don't know what he makes, but it's astronomical.
It's huge.
He has a huge deal.
So the caller said who Belichick would take. Again, I would take Aaron Donald because he's dominant, and the caller's right on Aaron Donald. It would be Johnny Hecker. Again, he spent about 22 minutes talking about Johnny Hecker 3 years ago, the last time these teams played, and wait till he's asked about him again leading into this game.
And he's a punter. He's cheap.
Oh, exactly. The lowest price. And next to the running back, the lowest priced position on the... I'd rather have a Hecker than a running back. Are you kidding me?
I almost said Zerline.
Okay. Jules in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Jules. What do you think about the Dee Ford offsides?
Yeah, well, you know, Murray just said that Brady said that he didn't see it, so I got nothing on that. What I do... First of all, you're a small hall guy, but you got Rivers going in. That's kind of funny.
I didn't vote him in. Again, that drives me nuts because I, for the 1,000th time, Philip Rivers is not in my Hall of Fame. The dimweeds that vote for it are going to vote him in on the first day. Peter King and everyone else who says everyone gets a trophy and all these guys that Philip Rivers probably helped him with on stories, they're going to vote him in. But he ain't a Hall of Famer. He ain't in my Hall of Fame. What's next, Jules?
All right, good. Hey, for the Edelman thing real quick, he didn't touch the ball. You know it. I know it. Let's get past that.
Now you're 0 for 3. I thought he touched it. But I thought for sure there was no evidence that showed me that he didn't. So 0 for 3. Let's go for 4.
Maz.
Yeah.
Jimmy got traded 3 years ago.
The last year, but go ahead.
0 for 5. Go. Next.
What are you talking about last year? He got traded a year before, didn't he?
He got traded during the 2017 season.
Anyways.
Goodbye, Jules.
No, go ahead. Go. Quickly.
How do you feel about your take now?
My opinion on it hasn't changed. They should have kept Garoppolo. I'm getting a lot of emails about this now. You know, yeah, Brady's going back to his second Super Bowl. How do you feel about Jimmy G now? Well, wait a minute. Brady was going to go last year no matter what. Garoppolo didn't replace him at the beginning of the season. So last year's irrelevant. Brady was going to play last year. And they're back at the Super Bowl now. No question about it. Could Jimmy G have gotten there? Probably not. Okay, so I'll give you that.
Well, that's man of you to say.
They haven't won it yet. They haven't won it yet.
I love it, Maz. I love it.
They haven't actually won the game yet.
That's where I'm at. I'm in my take bunker too, man. The old football coach once told me, if you're going to be a Bear, be a Grizzly. So if you're going to be on that side of it, you're in your take bunker. You stay there. You stay there till that, you know, that bunker-busting bomb comes in and blows you out of that take bunker. That's where I am. I'm not going to leave this bunker till that bomb comes and blows me up.
I mean, if they lose the Super Bowl, I know for damn sure they could have lost it with Jimmy G. You better win it before you start puffing your chest out.
Murray's update, back with more right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
A lot of respect for them. They've been doing it as consistently as any organization in the history of this league. And I've gotten a chance to get to know Coach Belichick a little bit. I've had a relationship with Josh McDaniels. Really, we practiced against those guys when I was in Washington early on and kind of have kept in contact with them. And you know, their team that you're always watching the way they do things, and you just have so much respect for the way that they've operated over the last handful of years. So it's going to be a great challenge, something that we'll get started on as soon as we end up here.
I just found this an interesting little exchange. No, maybe it's only me. But there's Todd McVay, that's the Rams head coach, of course, talking about Bill Belichick, and he goes into his relationship with Belichick. Met him during those joint practices with the Redskins when I was with Washington. You know, I've got developed a relationship with Josh McDaniels, kept in contact with those guys. So the way that McVay sort of portrays that is that, you know, he's in Belichick's circle of trust, or there's a, you know, lines of communication there. So I think, I don't know if this was a local writer or a Kansas City or a LA writer or Belichick was then asked about it because it sounded, you know, like McVay says he talks to Bill and he's, you know, got a relationship with Bill. That's what it sounded like.
When you went,
so they asked Belichick about this on his conference call yesterday, and here's how it went.
When you went to Washington for the joint practice in 2014, did you meet Sean McVay at all then? Did you spend any time with him?
We didn't spend much time together, no.
No, we didn't spend any time together. What? Yeah, McVay just went on about how you opened up this relationship with him starting in Washington.
Yeah, friend of Bill's? Is that what he's getting at?
So the porter's like, well, then what about... go ahead.
But then you executed the trade for Brandon Cook, so have you come to know him a little bit since he's become head coach?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's it. And that was it. That was the answer.
I believe the reporter was Ben Volen.
Oh, was that Ben?
I think it was Volen, yeah.
So maybe he heard McVay and Ben's like...
But then you executed the trade for Brandon Cook, so have you come to know him a little bit since he's become head coach?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. He got the cup treatment.
And, of course, Bill's putting away the coffee cup in the cafeteria while he's talking to Ben.
Friggin'.
In one of those big industrial dishwasher trays.
Friggin' Volen.
So I just found that amusing, how McVay goes on for about a minute about how he struck up a relationship with these guys, lines of communication are open, developed a relationship with Josh McDaniels, you know, and Bill says...
We didn't spend much time together, no.
No, we didn't even really. I don't even know what you're talking about. Let me put away this coffee cup, but then you did execute the Cooks trade, right? So you must have, you know, get to know him a little bit.
Yeah, I know.
Bill is just in one of these moods.
He won't engage in that storyline. He knows what people want in that storyline, right? He's not going near that.
Well, let me tell you, he's not going to go. He's not going to go there with Volen and us. Wait till he gets, and this has now happened like the last three or four times they've gone to the Super Bowl. Because I know it's like clockwork.
Turns on the charm.
Bill gets there and he's sort of in a good mood. He'll engage questions. He won't dump on people. He's not shooting snot rockets at reporters. He's not grunting into the microphone. He's not mumbling. He's on the injury report. You know, he's not doing any of this crap that he does on a normal basis. He knows he's in a national setting. And so, wouldn't you know it, he just decides to act like a normal human being for a couple days. He does. So this is going to happen. Guaranteed. He's going to get to Atlanta. The first couple press conferences, the writer's going to look and go, oh, he's not so bad after all. Look, he's in a good mood. What are those Boston guys talking about? And it's Bill's just totally going to turn it on because he's done that there the last several times. He knows it by now. He turns on the charm. That's exactly right. Like, for example, the question on Aaron Donald, something tells me he's going to go on a little bit more than he did yesterday when asked about Aaron Donald.
This is a good line, though. But go ahead.
Curious what stands out to you specifically about Aaron Donald and his style of play?
Everything. Pretty much unblockable.
Period. Paragraph. Next question.
It was kind of abrupt.
I'm just telling you, he's not going to do that next week.
What is that? Everything? He's pretty much unblockable. Five words.
Everything. Five. Pretty much unblockable.
He didn't even say he's. It's four words. Pretty much unblockable.
Left out the pronoun. Save time.
Right. It's more efficient.
So then there was this exchange on the roster turnover. I don't know who asked it. I haven't heard this. I just read it on the transcript. It sounded like Bill was being Bill, so I wanted to hear it. I'm going to hear it for myself for the first time. But it feels like this was a little abrupt as well. Go ahead with this exchange, Jimmy.
According to the numbers, Super Bowl teams usually turn over about a third of their roster the next season. Haven't had to make those decisions. I'm curious if you think it's just the nature of the business and salary cap that you must say goodbye to good players that were parts of good teams.
All right, wait a minute. So what does this have to do with the game now?
Oh, that's great. That's great.
That is priceless.
That's great, though. Oh, just the pause. Oh, the pause alone. Just give me the question into the pause, please. The end of the question. That question was too long, buddy.
That you must say goodbye to good players that were parts of good teams.
All right, wait a minute. So what does this have to do with the game now?
7 full seconds.
Zero. So the question's only going to get worse next week. I guarantee you he's not going to do that. He hasn't done that for years at the podium down there, those media days. He knows.
No, he turns on the charm. He does, and he knows it's a commitment, and so he'll play nice with everybody. And you know, I'm sure he'll rave about how Sean is one of the great, you know, good young coaches in the game and blah, 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 blah. When in reality, he wants to close his right nostril, shoot snot out of his left one, and say, let's get...
Or boot his computer up, or throw his coffee cup into the sink, or log on to his computer, or type out emails to Linda while he's talking on the conference call.
Thank you.
Did that happen yesterday? Someone thanked him and he didn't say anything?
He was probably like,
thank you.
Who's that jackass?
That's great. It's just the best.
What was that vibrating noise, Jimmy? What was that one?
That was the end of this guy's follow-up question and Bill's kind of dismissive answer.
Well, that's what they're telling you it was.
Yeah.
So, anyway, there's that. Back. Yeah, he's still logging to his computer. Back to your thoughts right for this long commercial-free segment.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Coach Belichick's the best at this. What do the Rams do best, and how are we going to say, we're not coming out of this game letting them beat us doing this? And that's why we've got to be aware of what are those things. I think that our players have done a nice job specific to the offense, demonstrating Jared spreads the ball around. You get 7 different guys involved, whether it's running the football, 5 different guys catching it that Jared spread it around to, really, you know, actually more than that when you include the backs. But all the tight ends, the receivers that were playing, got involved in the game. We've had the ability to run or throw it. So we'll see what kind of approach that they want to be able to take. But you know that they've got a great understanding of how to attack you and make you feel like, all right, you're in defense mode when you're on offense.
So that's Sean McVay. That's just one thing we're hitting on today that I find interesting is McVay knows it. He just said it. Bill Belichick's the best there is at making you play left-handed, taking away the best thing that you do and making you, you know, win with your second or third thing. So what's the number one option on the Rams, Murray? You know, I think it's easier with the Chiefs. It's Tyreek Hill. Maybe you say it's Kelsey, but I think there's guys to identify there, right? And even if you want to say the quarterback, right, whether it's blitzing him or keeping him in the pocket, however you deem, you know, Mahomes is the head of the snake, or Hill's the key to the offense or whatever. I mean, I think you can identify those individual pieces in Kansas City. With the Rams, who is it?
I mean, at times, for the bit that I've watched them, I'm talking to the passing game here, when he's been healthy, Gurley, but other times it looks like Cooks, other times it looks like Robert Woods. I don't know. That's the thing. That's what makes this team so dangerous.
So that's what I think the Rams have going for them, is that there's not really that, well, if you take away Gurley, they'll just hand it to the fat kid. And if you take away the running game, there's all this sort of play. The Rams will throw it if they have to throw it. They've got a really advanced passing attack. You take away the pass, they'll run it down your throat. So it's like, and it's not even totally dependent on the quarterback. I think it's dependent on the scheme, right? It's really a scheme thing. It's not the individual talent thing.
Agreed.
So,
I mean, he almost does, you know, in a lot of ways, what the Patriots do, which is whatever the best matchup is where we're going to go on that given day. So it's a problem. I mean, again,
it's just different, right? They can't attack. I don't think they could attack the Rams like they would another team. Identify that one thing and take it out. I don't feel that way.
It's a little like Philly last year. Like,
oh, in terms of how they disguise plays, a lot of play action, stuff like that. Yeah, that's what's scary.
Well, and also with Philly, we said the same thing. Is it Jeffrey? Is it Aguilar? Is it Ertz?
Right, who do you take out?
Yeah, like which guy? Because now there's a lot of balance there. They can go really to any one of them. Now, to me, it would have been Ertz, and I think it's Ertz now. But at the time, I don't think it was that clear.
Okay, so we have got that on the board, Maz's Hall of Fame ballot on the board. We'll reset some of the big boys' thoughts. We got Greg Bedard in earlier on a Wednesday, so we'll reset some of his hot takes next hour. But as promised, to your phones, Derek on Martha's Vineyard on overtime in the NFL. Go ahead, Derek.
Hey, Frog, I know you said that you might be in favor of an overtime rule change in the NFL so that both teams get a chance. I heard some interesting numbers today that since the rule change in overtime in the NFL, the team who wins the coin flip only wins the game 52% of the time, which doesn't seem like a huge advantage.
That's regular season.
Not postseason.
So in the playoffs, since they made it a touchdown wins, there's been 8 postseason overtime games. The team that won the flip has won 5 of them on the first drive. 5 of the 8.
Okay. Now in college, it shouldn't matter who wins the coin flip since you both get a chance. But the team who does win the coin flip wins the game 55%.
So this I read, the team that wins the toss wins it 55% of the time because they defer in college because you each get a chance guaranteed. It's like a baseball inning. You want to go last because then you get to know whether you're going for 3 or 7 and what it will take.
Sure, makes sense.
So there's an advantage to go second in college. I don't want college because I think that's contrived, too contrived. I don't like placing the ball in the 25. The thing I want is just take out the sudden death. Make it a 10-minute period. So winning the toss still matters. You still want to go first because on offense, maybe you can bleed the clock for 8 minutes and give the other team just 2 minutes left with the ball. That still matters, but it gives the other side a fighting chance. And I mentioned, of the 8 postseason games decided by that touchdown, 5 were to the team that won the toss on the first possession. The quarterbacks in those 5 games that never got to touch the ball were Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan, Pat Mahomes. I think you got 3 or 4 MVPs on that list. So I'm not saying the current format's unfair because they both have the same odds and the same chance. So I don't think it's unfair that Kansas City never got the ball. It is what it is. I don't think it's the best system. I don't think it's if you're the league and you want the most drama and if you want the most intrigue, don't you want you want to have overtimes where Roethlisberger, Rodgers, Mahomes, MVP Matt Ryan, or God forbid one day Tom Brady doesn't even touch the ball? That just doesn't feel like a good format to me. If I were the league, again, the analogy I made before is the Celtics make overtime in the 80s and Larry Bird doesn't touch the ball. What kind of overtime is that? So I would just change it because I think it would be better. Not that necessarily it's unfair.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, what the NBA does is extend the game.
Yeah, that's all I would want, too.
Right? So just extend the game and, like you said, take out the sudden death. I don't know. It's an interesting idea.
Paul in New Hampshire on Maz's Hall of Fame ballot. Go ahead.
Oh, Maz, you're killing me. As my official representative to the BBWA, I'm convinced you guys are picking these out of a hat. It's holiday first ballot, maybe. A little bit of a sympathy vote there. I'm sure, obviously, Rivera gets what he gets. But Mike Cena guy... What did you guys do, line up the Cy Young trophies and vote on those?
I didn't vote for Messina.
Oh, you're still my representative.
So he's blaming you for Congress's mistakes.
Yeah, that's okay. You can do that. It's fair. Listen, I'm with you on that. I'm with you. I think he's right. Like, you know, you say, I don't get the argument from one guy or another. I threw the numbers part of it out of the equation a long time ago. The steroid era destroyed that. So what you're left with is your knowledge, your instinct, your eyes of looking at it and say, I watched that guy play. I know how good he was. Ken Griffey. Yes. So that's it. What can I tell you to me? And in that way, it's got to be a slam dunk. Now, some of the, to me, you also compare guys against their peers. That's the only way you can do it. Comparing Craig Biggio to like Bobby Doerr is or whatever is one of the stupidest things ever. It makes no sense. It has no, there's no connection between the two whatsoever other than the fact they played the same position.
Here's Alex and Natick. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So I have to agree with you on the Patriots catching some lucky breaks, but I think every championship team in every sport has to catch lucky breaks to make it all the way.
I'd say most.
I agree.
I mean, not all, but most.
And then my second point was, during that roughing the passer where Brady did not get hit in the face, I did see that Edelman looked like he got absolutely just pass interfered in the secondary and they didn't get the call there.
Okay, if that makes you feel better, tell yourself that. That's fine. Whatever helps you sleep at night. Some teams don't need lucky breaks. The Jordan Bulls in the 90s didn't need many breaks, and the Patriots have had some teams here. I think 2004 stands out. They didn't need a single break.
But as a general rule, I think to win a championship, you got to catch a break here and there.
Yes, especially when the teams are, you know, relatively even.
Sure.
And in the same, there's no great team in the NFL, I don't think. And so, yeah, if the Rams beat you, they're probably going to get a break. If you beat the Rams, you're probably going to get a break. To walk into Kansas City and win the game with a -2 turnover differential, you needed some breaks, and you got them. You got breaks. It's okay. I think, to admit, I think. Keith in the car. Go ahead, Keith.
Hi, guys. I usually call to disagree with you, and then I got into the car today when you were complaining about the fans not being able to accept breaks, and it got me to thinking, if you look back the last 20 years, this entire dynasty, I could break it down for you every year, the breaks that they got.
2004, but so Keith, I just go to 2004 because I don't think there was no luck involved with that team. They steamrolled everybody.
But in 04, though, they wouldn't have been quite in the position they were in had Vanderjerk not missed the kick on opening night. So there's a break. And there's breaks everywhere. I mean, you go back to 01 with the tuck rule, the Cundiff missing the kick, Lee Evans dropping the ball. I mean, nobody gets to where they are without a break here or there. I don't know why people are having a hard time accepting them. It's kind of asinine because we've had a ton of breaks in the last 20 years.
True that.
And then to your other point, just real quick, the Rams, you don't stop a person. You stop a facet of their game. You stop the running game, and you stop the play action. Goff cannot beat you dropping back 30 times a game and throwing to Cooks or Woods or anybody else for that matter. You stop the running game, and they can't play action. You make them one-dimensional. It's that simple.
Okay. Is that a fair analysis?
I think there's some truth to that. Yeah, because, again, Goff doesn't scare me as a pure whip it 50 times and beat you kind of quarterback. He doesn't. They have to scheme it for Goff. There were certain balls, to me anyway, that he throws better than others. And it feels to me like he really steps in and throws in the middle of the field, between the hashes, crossing routes. Like, in a lot of ways, sort of similar to Brady in that way. He's good at those throws. And I think that McVay is going to try to simplify it and make it that way for him. If the game ends up in his hands, the Patriots are in good shape. I think.
Okay. Wouldn't you have said the exact same thing about Nick Foles?
Well, I felt differently about that game than a lot of people did.
Okay, but just that facet of it. You put it in the hands of Nick Foles, that's the ball game.
I didn't feel that way. I said over and over again, the Eagles have a lot of guys to defend. Like, there's a lot of guys to cover there.
You don't think the Rams have the same thing?
Not like Philly did. I think Philly had more. I do. Now, maybe this guy's better at scheming it, but I think Philly, between, you know, Aguilar, Jeffrey, Ertz, the guys out of the, like, that's five guys you can cover, four or five guys. I think this team's got three.
Yeah, I generally think Goff stinks, but after last year, like, who the hell knows? Because I thought the same thing about Nick.
But don't misinterpret as me thinking that, like, this is a blowout. I don't think that. I think people acting that way, idiots. Like, all of a sudden, this, you know, and I've been asking people this the last couple of days, you know, who do you like? Well, how do you not like the Patriots now? Well, how do you not like them? And I'm thinking, because what happened 2 days ago is not going to have any bearing on what happens in 2 weeks.
But my point is, I don't even think it was all that special what happened 2 days ago. They made so many mistakes. They so easily could have lost that game. You could make the case they should have lost that game. But yet people are treating it like another thing. Well, they've really flipped the switch and they keep playing like this. It's all over. If they keep playing like, if they play like they did in Kansas City, I don't know if you, how many games are you going to win -2 turnover differential? How many games are you going to win where your punt returner comes up to field a short hop punt and may or may not touch the ball for a muff in the fourth quarter of a 3-point? How many of those games are you going to win if you keep doing that? Can you keep counting on the dingbat opposing defensive lineman to line up a foot and a half offsides? If they play that way against the Rams, I don't know. It's hard to survive. They survive this one, but I think that's what people are missing. All those mistakes that you made in the tail end of that ball game, so easily. We could be sitting here saying, you had that commanding lead in Kansas City, and you started turning the ball over, muffing punts, giving it to the other side, coming up short on fourth down, jumping off sides on defense on the final possession. Do you know how many mistakes you made in that game?
I mean, a ton. And I'll tell you what,
and all because Brady can convert, all because you won the coin flip and Brady can convert third and 10, it's like, poof, they all go away. Not on Felger and Maz, they don't. They don't go away on Felger and Maz, Murray.
Oh, no. We hold on to them. We preserve them.
Okay, we'll keep holding it here right after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials, and we'll join you then.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.